When looking into the reflections in the darksome mirror, you never know what may be staring back. Thank you for listening to Reflections in the Darksome Mirror, an otherworldly dark fantasy audio drama and solo play adventure podcast inspired by classic fantasy tabletop games. This audio experience is intended to blend a sense of novel-esque character drama with the randomness of a tabletop game. Artificial intelligence has not been used in any way to contribute, construct, or add to this podcast, and insofar as I have a say, I, the creator, do not consent to the use of this podcast for AI training material. This episode will cover background information, character creation, and an explanation of game mechanics. If this perhaps doesn't appeal to you, I made sure to release episode 1 at the same time. Please proceed to that episode if you'd like to jump right into the story. The semi-solo actual play style of podcast is inspired by a few others, but most singularly the Tale of the Manticore podcast, which I would like to give a big shout out to. Please go take a listen if you haven't already. If you're used to the style of Tale of the Manticore, this podcast does have some distinct differences. It is perhaps slightly closer to an audiobook than Tale of the Manticore in style, though the dice will still be a factor in the story. I have a character that has a few preset characteristics, an existing setting, and a reasonably well-defined framework of history in that setting. There is also a concrete theorem of magic, or Arcana. Let's discuss themes and tone. This podcast will, in the future, make explicit mentions of violence. It certainly won't go into slasher or splatterpunk territory, but there will be blood and gore. There will be mention of things like slavery, genocide, and racism. There will be no explicit descriptions of sexual assault or similar, but it may be mentioned in the narrative indirectly. What follows is a long-form introduction into the rules, setting, and character creation for the podcast, and it can meander into a rant. Consider yourself warned. If you're still listening, let's talk about Darksome Mirror or where it came from. So, I grew up with the love of fantasy novels and video games, and in my teen years, I also got into tabletop role-playing games. Dungeons & Dragons and the World of Darkness games were chief among these, but there were many others. Additionally, fencing or swordsmanship has always been a big fascination of mine. To this day, I practice and teach historical European martial arts, or HEMA. There may be long and involved descriptions of swords, sword parts, armor parts, or swordsmanship techniques. And so I decided that while there are a great many tabletop role-playing games of excellent quality, I would like to build my own system that suited my own story in the world of Fallgrath, which is the continent or realm the story of the podcast will take place in, mostly. While old-school Dungeons & Dragons is an amazing game with broad appeal, I have found that it can shoehorn characters into very specific roles. Some people enjoy this, maybe most of them. However, I wanted a system that could let you create nearly any kind of character you want while preserving a strong measure of lethality and groundedness. So I created a TTRPG rule set called Darksome Mirror, and then this podcast, Reflections in the Darksome Mirror, to tell a story with it. What is the setting? Let me first roughly describe a map. I will upload a map to the podcast blog for reference, and that should be out at the same time as this episode. For now, the important locations are on the western side of the map. We will have the Praetorian Empire, a large, mostly flat region featuring a lake in the south. To its northwest, we have the elven countries of the Shalastrazaran Enclave and the Emerald Heart. The specific places we will focus on for the first episode are Moonshard Bay, a moderate-sized trading port and coastal elven city, and the regions around it. South of it is, of course, the Praetorian Empire, and a peninsula known as Gandabrath's Spear, and that is a largely human region. There is a history of soft and sometimes not-so-soft conflict between the two over the years. The time where our story takes place is approximately 100 years after the slaying of the Mad Emperor of Praetoria, a ruthless tyrant who consorted with demons. The Praetorian Empire limped on, though its governmental structure was vastly reorganized, subdividing many of the areas inside its borders into provinces run by local nobles, and its influence overall was much reduced. Many treaties were signed with other governing leaders. The heroes of that story were Dragon Bonded, Dragon Riders, heroes who formed a magical bond with dragons in order to pursue a goal of peace across the land. The most famous of these are Lorthadast, a human given near immortality by his dragon bond, as all Dragon Riders do, and Serenya, an elf of the Shalastrazaran Enclave. After deposing the mad tyrant, they decided that they wished to have a child, but that the child should grow up in her mother's more traditional hometown. Town along the forested coast of the woods called Moonshard Bay. This child will be our protagonist.
occupied with the foundation of a school for the dragon riders and dragons themselves on the faraway island of Lyris to the east. Serenia and Lorthedast, although they would visit occasionally, were separated from their progeny by nearly the whole continent of Volgrath. They would entrust her raising to someone else, a relative of their mother's that still lives in the city. This will be an aunt who is a town archivist or record keeper. In the society of the Melauthandrim, or Moon Elves, in the common tongue, women can and do hold many positions of importance, especially in religious offices. So, we have something of a set background for our main character, the child of these two heroes. She will be named Shinnereth, and being born of a human father and an elven mother, of course, renders her one of, or the, only half-elf in the town. However, the blood of elves is potent, and so she still ages like an elf would rather than anything resembling a human. So we arrive at a character who is 90 winters old, or in the elven traditional reckoning, considered a young adult and about to undergo a traditional naming ceremony. In this ceremony, she will gain a formal name, and then not soon after, foray into apprenticeship in one job or another. Her mother's name, for example, is Serenia Who Sings to the Stars, which describes her affinity for divination magic. But what kind of name might Shinnereth gain, and what kind of character will Shinnereth be? Part of the appeal for podcasts like this, at least to me, is that characters are influenced or created by the roll of the dice. So we do have some set things about Shinnereth. She exists as a child of two characters who are already established in a defined place. Having parents who are famous heroes and being raised by someone of above average means gives her some privilege. You can't truly put a personality and all of its nuances on a character sheet, but perhaps by rolling for the stats on the character sheet, we can determine some starting characteristics. The character sheet for Darksome Mirror, in essence, revolves around 6 core attributes and 22 skills. There are some other factors we'll get into as well. The 6 core attributes in alphabetic order are Charisma, Finesse, Fortitude, Intellect, Resolve, and Strength. Unlike some other systems, the base value of these attributes is 1 and the highest is 6, but some bonuses may allow it to go to 7 or 8 depending on the scenario. If we wish to extrapolate, a character with 1 Finesse is likely to be clumsy or physically awkward. A character with 2 Finesse might be on the low side of average, and with 3 Finesse, they can be considered to have at least a moderate amount of poise and grace. So you get the idea. The rules that I've written have every attribute start at 1 as a base, then you may spread 10 points among the attributes, arriving at a maximum score of 4 at this stage in character creation. After this, we may add the ancestral modifiers, which in the case of half-elves, allow you to add 2 more attribute points anywhere. With these bonuses, we can exceed a maximum score of 4. I believe the only truly random way to do this is to roll 10d6 for base attribute points, plus 2d6 for ancestry points, and then assign the numbers to attributes simply based on their order. So, 1 corresponding with charisma, 2 with finesse, and so on. As long as we don't get more than 4 of the same number, it should adhere to the rules. We'll impose an additional rule where at least 1 of each attribute must be added to, as I'd rather not play a character with any severe disadvantages. Okay, let's roll it up. Roll 12d6. That's... Okay. So we have 2, 5, 2, 5, 5, 1, 1, 4, 3, 6, 4, 4. Or after we look at the attributes with their additions, we have Charisma at 3. Finesse at 3, Fortitude at 2, Intellect at 4, Resolve at 4, and Strength at 2. So I think this gives a good picture of what the character can be. So average or maybe slightly below average in physical stats and above average mental stats. 4 Resolve is especially interesting. I think I see an idea of determined intelligence, or perhaps stubborn intelligence in this character. There is an opportunity to spend experience at the end of character creation as well, and then when we get there, we may further modify the stats. Let's continue for now. Next are the skills. So unlike the attributes, these all start at 0, and there are 22 of them. Given the way the character has shaken out so far, I think it makes sense for her to have more skills in intellect than any other area. That said, her parents are famous heroes, so how can we introduce an element of randomness? I think the best way to do that would be to put one skill into all the skills that make sense for her to have some background in, and then roll to award the others in a way biased toward intellect skills. So we have 20 skill points. Starting at the top with the charisma skills, I think it might make sense for her to have 1 point in animal ken, diplomacy, and performance. Let's go with performance dance specifically, since there is a tradition among elves of her kind to dance. On to the finesse skills, acrobatics, heavy blades, marksmanship, ride, and stealth make the most sense, so we'll put one in each of those. For intellect skills, academics, arcana, awareness, deduction, and survival. There is only one strength skill, that being athletics. I would say 1 point there makes sense as well. This means that we have a total of 14 skill points that have been spent, and that's 6 left. However, half-elves, from their ancestry, inherently get 3 free skill points of any variety, so the total is 9 remaining. Since we have established that Shinarath is a more mentally focused character, I'm going to roll a d10. On a roll of 1, 2, or 3, we will put a point into a charisma skill. On a roll of 4, 5, or 6, a finesse skill. 6, 7, 8, or 9, an intellect skill. And on 10, strength skill, which is athletics. Okay, it's pretty interesting. So 9, 10, 10, 8, 4, 8, 8, 2, 6. So we have 1 charisma skill, 2 finesse skills, 4 intellect skills, and 2 more points in athletics. For our charisma skill, I think we have a point in deception. That makes the most sense. Intelligent people would learn to more believably lie. For finesse, if we use our earlier idea considering her athletics, I think putting both points into heavy blades makes the most sense. Perhaps she enjoyed dedicating herself to swordsmanship, and the style of weapon most popular among her people is the elven warblade, which is a large two-handed saber. It would be something like a bigger Kriegsmesser, or Swiss saber, or Japanese nodachi if you want a real-life analog. For intellect, we have a few questions. I think putting at least one more point into academics makes sense. Arcana as a skill is the study of magic in the planes, but it does not necessarily mean that the character is a magic user, and that is something we will have to determine later. Both of her parents are arcanists, and I think one more point in arcana makes sense. I think also another point in awareness might make sense. We'll put a point there. For the last one, let's roll a 1d4. And if we get a 1, I'll decide on crafts. If we get a 3, then we'll put it in the other skills mentioned previously. Okay, we have a 1, of course. So crafts can be almost anything in the world. Part of me wonders if this is a more artistic or practical pursuit. So we'll do a high-low roll on a d10. High for artistic and low for practical. We have a lower number. So that's a more practical pursuit. The most sensible thing to me is weaponsmithing. At this low rank, she might have a few things. I've learned a few things about the maintenance of weapons and such, and perhaps not any advanced smithing. So the sharpening, grinding, and maintaining of blades, or perhaps the crafting of simple weapons like arrows for a bow. And that concludes the skill. So the standouts are heavy blades with 3, and athletics also with 3. There is another unique factor in character creation for the system, and that is the demigods. So there are 27 of them, and aside from being historically documented, they all provide a small bonus. Some of them provide skill bonuses, but a few of them provide other bonuses, such as to initiative or mana. And one may ask, why demigods and not gods? There were gods, but historically, all that is widely known is that they were slain long ago. The deity of the Moon Elves is defined in the history, and that is Aranthe, demigoddess of the Moon and the Dream Forest. So Shinarath would at least know and respect this demigoddess as the patron of her people. However, there is a chance that she could follow some other deity more closely, maybe even in secret. Before we do this, let's see something else that might shape this decision. Does she have a good relationship with her parents? On the one hand, they aren't around as much as they could be. However, they do write letters to her, and if they visit enough, it still could be a decent relationship. I don't think it would be perfect, though. So I'll roll a 1d6 and add 2, and then we'll consider the result between 1 and 10, meaning that a perfect score and a very low score are both impossible. Of course, this could change throughout the story. Okay, so I actually rolled a 1. So this result indicates that there's definitely some resentment that Shinnereth has between herself and her parents. She's probably intelligent enough to realize that she's been given rather a lot of privilege just by the circumstance of her birth, but she sees her parents as still rather detached, more focused on their grand pursuits rather than her. And in this light, I think it is somewhat likely that she may not put Aranthe first as many other moon elves would, including her mother. Given her academic inclinations, she would at least be aware that all the other demigods exist. So the rebellious choice probably would be the demigoddess Rhiannon, who is Aranthe's half-sister, and is associated with the Plane of Darkness. So we'll do a simple high-low. On a low, Rhiannon, and on a high roll, Aranthe. Okay, we have a low roll, so that is Rhiannon. It's important to point out that the Plane of Darkness might sound inherently negative, but all of the planes are accepted as inherent parts of life in this universe, and none of the demigods or demigoddesses are inherently seen as evil in the world, and they all do have dedicated clergy. So it is highly possible for her to follow Rhiannon while simultaneously still respecting Aranthe and any number of other deities for that matter.
Perhaps there is an aspect of balance or yin and yang in this. Being a follower of Rhiannon grants a bonus of 1 to the performance dance skill, bringing the total to 2. The next section of character creation is dedicated to backgrounds and flaws. These might be compared to feats in Dungeons & Dragons, though flaws are inherently negative. Backgrounds and flaws balance each other out in a sense, meaning that you get a set number of background points upon character creation and have the option to take flaws, which are negative, but doing so allows you to take more background points in return. These backgrounds can be related to ancestry, societal standing, or many other extrinsic or intrinsic things. Some specific backgrounds will make more sense for this character than others. For backgrounds, it makes sense for Shinnereth to have some degree of local fame, being the daughter of 2 heroes. Since fame is a score from 1 to 6, I think a 2 might make the most sense here, as she is still quite young by elven standards. With this also would come a title of minor noble as well, or lady, given her mother's standing. So that is 2 points in title and 2 points in fame or status. Given her ancestry, there could be some ancestral backgrounds as well. As someone with the blood of a moon elf, she could receive a light bonus to awareness checks for 1 point. Her connection to Rhiannon could also give her a 4-point background, allowing her to use the performance dance skill in place of acrobatics for dodging in combat, which is an interesting feature. Since there are so many backgrounds and flaws, I think it makes the most sense to determine if Shinnereth is an Arcanist first, which is the biggest decision to take place here. Arcanist is the in-universe term for magic user. Now to talk about magic. Arcanists require 2 things to actually use magic in this universe: mana and spellweaving intent. Most sentient beings in the realm have mana, but very few have spellweaving intent. These are called spell-muted in the academic sense. There are also rare individuals who may have no mana but spellweaving intent, who are called spell thieves because they must steal mana, or those with neither mana nor intent, called tabula rasa or blanks. And there are yet others who have an ability to nullify magic, appropriately called nullifiers. Given Shinnereth's background and the importance of magic, I'm going to roll a d20 with custom odds here. On a 1 to 9, she's a spell-muted individual, or the most common arcane state of being for the average person in the universe. On a 10 to 17, she's an arcanist. On an 18, she has neither mana nor intent. On a 19, she's a spell thief. And on a 20, she is a nullifier. Rolled an 8, she is spell-muted. It is important to note that another type of magic called sorcery exists in the game, in where you seek out a patron to cast magic. However, for the purpose of this story, I will say that should Shinnereth seek to become a sorcerer, it would have to happen later on and not at character creation, as it wouldn't make sense for someone born in her position of relative comfort to seek something that is illegal in some parts of the world, where they still burn witches. Being spell-muted is a small flaw that gives a negative 1. By default, we have 12 points to spend on backgrounds. With spell muted in consideration, that increases to 13. Is there another flaw that makes sense? Looking through them, nocturnal would make sense. Perhaps at some point, Shinnereth realized that she had a connection to the night that is stronger than her connection to the day. Additionally, being nocturnal would not be very unusual to a group of elves who revere the moons in Volgrath. There are 4 moons in Volgrath. This is a 3-point flaw, so that grants us 3 more background points. There is another flaw worth 1 point, which I'll keep secret for now, but will reveal in the story later, which makes sense. In combination with the 5 background points that being a half-elf grants her, this brings our total to 22. There is an appealing idea I had about inheriting a family sword from an ancestor, an elf of minor renown that died decades ago, whom Shinnereth still remembers fondly. For plot purposes, I will keep the full nature of this item secret, but it will cost 11 background points to have. After this, we have 6 background points remaining. I think the most sensible way to assign this at this point would be to roll on the table created for randomly generating characters and then re-roll if the result does not make sense. For example, there are a lot of results that could represent training with weapons that Shinnereth would not have reasonably used or encountered, such as the great Stormhammer weapons of the northern regions. Additionally, the Arcanist backgrounds will need to be re-rolled since we have already decided her state of arcane being. Depending on the point cost of the background rolled, we will also roll again until we spend all of our points. Rolling a d100. And we have 52, and that corresponds to common sense, and what is written about that is a character with that background may ask the storyteller for guidance. Since I am both the player and the storyteller, this is a mindbender that I wish to avoid, so we're going to re-roll this. I've rolled a 17. That is corresponds with beautiful looks for 4 points. I think this can make sense. There are no shortness of ballads about both her parents, which could certainly mention their looks as well. This gives a 2-point bonus to most social roles involving parties visible to each other, assuming those parties are at least neutral. Since we have 2 more points, I'll roll again. This corresponds with Iron Will, which is worth 4 points, and there isn't a lesser version, so we will re-roll. And we have a 5. I think this is a winner. This corresponds to Anatomic Alteration, which is a variable point background. So at 2 points, it can grant the benefit of appearing superficially mystical in some way that provides a minor mechanical benefit. This is pretty open-ended. Anatomic Alteration mentions many things from subtle enhanced vision or more exotic things. So let's do a high-low roll, and on a low roll, it will be more subtle, or on a high roll, it will be more unusual. We have a middle roll. So I think we have something unusual but not outrageously flamboyant. In my background information, I wrote down that Shinnereth might possess some blood of the Storm Giants, which were one of the predecessor people of the world that are believed to be extinct. I had imagined this simply manifesting in her being rather tall, but perhaps there is a little more than that. The Storm Giants were scholar warriors with exceptional acclimatization to cold environments. Shinnereth, being born of a human father with a semi-fair skin tone and a mother who is a moon elf, moon elves possessing skin tones ranging from mauve to navy blue, I imagine this would render her skin a blue-gray. This would be unusual, and also the kind of color that I would imagine Storm Giants to be. In addition to this, perhaps she has a resistance to cold weather and cold damage. As a flavor thing, perhaps she also feels cold to the touch, and she will have eyes in a bright turquoise color, which is probably rare but not unheard of among the Malathendrim. Alright, we're nearing the finish lines. The next step would be experience expenditures. This is supposed to represent the ways a character might progress in the short time before their adventure or game time, as it were. We have 30 points of experience to spend normally, but in this case we've already spent 8 points on backgrounds, leaving 22 left. I'm tempted to spend 12 experience on a 4th level of Heavy Blades, which I think would suit the character well, so let's do that. This leaves us with 10 points left over. I think we'll spread this out slightly. There's a weapon training background that would make sense for Shinnereth to have. A weapon style specific to her inherited weapon called Dancer's Momentum, which grants a bonus parry dodge and attack dice while using the weapon if you are able to freely move. This would cost 3 experience. I think a point in the Light Blade skill would also make sense, which would cost 3 experience. For the last little bit of experience, I think a point in Herbalism might make sense. She lives in a coastal forest region, and it makes sense for Herbalism to be included in her academic study. The next step in character creation is to calculate derived stats. First is the character's health points, which are derived from their fortitude score, plus 1/2 of their strength score rounded down, plus 6. In Shinnereth's case, this is 9.
Health is simply the amount of damage someone can take. It seems like a very low number compared to some other games, but it is meant to emulate realistic and lethal combat. Next is Initiative. Initiative modifier is calculated by adding finesse to the character's awareness skill. This is 5. Initiative in this system is a modifier added to a single 1d10 roll, unlike most other rolls. This is to preserve an aspect of variance, while still adding some number for characters who invest in the stats. Next is Willpower, which is the ability for a user to push past fear and mind-altering effects. It is somewhat like a morale score from old-school D&D as well. This is Intellect plus Resolve, which is 8 for this character, a pretty high score. Next is Mana, which is a combination of all mental stats, or 10 for Shinnereth. Mana is present in almost all living creatures on the temporal plane, even if they are not casters. Mana regeneration per day is determined by Resolve, which is 4 for this character. Speed, which is more of an abstract number for how fast a character is compared to others, is Strength plus Finesse plus the higher of Athletics or Acrobatics, which in this case makes the total 8. Some ancestries or other modifiers cause bonuses or penalties to speed, although not in Shinnereth's case. Next are Fate Points. These allow a character to reroll one result per point per session. And these are derived from Resolve divided by 2, rounded down, so having a high Resolve score pays off here, giving us 2 Fate Points. Some ancestries or backgrounds give bonus Fate Points, but not in Shinnereth's case. After calculating our derived stats, we can choose specialties and talents. This is one of my favorite aspects of the system. Specialties can be chosen for free, and you gain 4 points in a skill or attribute, and serve as both a way to define a character and grant a mechanical advantage. Specialties in an attribute allow the addition of 1 dice to any pool where they are relevant, and talents in a skill allow for the target roll for a skill with which they apply to succeed on a 7 instead of an 8, which is a significant factor for larger dice pools. Further along, I will go into more depth about the dice system and how rolls function with an example. For now, let's talk about which skills and attributes get specialties or talents. Intellect and Resolve too, both being at 4. So for Intellect, I think there are a few good choices. Book knowledge, creative, and arcane inclination makes sense. I think that creative lends the most to this character, so we'll go with that. For Resolve, there are fewer choices, but Determined seems to fit how we've already discussed the character. For skills, we have a few talents. One is for free as part of character creation, and we can get a talent in Performance, because Performance and Craft always have talents. And then we have a talent in Heavy Blade, since Shinnereth has 4 points in that. Her Performance talent will be Dance, and her Heavy Blade's talent will be with the Elven Warblade. And for the free talent, the best choice is probably with the Sight option under Awareness. Aside from busy work and filling in some descriptions, the last step is to calculate languages. Every character can speak the language of Dvorian, which may be considered the world's version of the common human tongue. Shinnereth can speak Moon Tongue also, being a language of her mother and the place she grew up in. For having 4 points in intellect, she gains 1 other language. I think Draconic makes the most sense, being the language of arcane study, and exactly the choice a creative and perhaps somewhat rebellious child may pursue if they wanted an exotic standout language. For equipment, there are standard rules for such, but in the context of this story, Shinnereth's equipment will be determined in the narrative. To summarize, let's describe Shinnereth. She has teal-colored eyes, silver hair, and blue-gray skin. She has strong skills with an Elven Warblade, and just as sharp as her sword skills are her intellect and resolve. Aside from her sword skills and a few intellectual areas, her skills could be seen as lacking or not particularly well-rounded. Though she is fascinated by the arcane, she does not, at least at this time, possess the unique spell-weaving intent to actually cast spells. Physically, she is rather tall, taller than most men. She has the strong legs and forearm that a talented swordswoman would have, though perhaps not the hardiest constitution. She is a rare and noticeable beauty with a mix of her mother's noble features and her father's strong brow. Now that we've talked about our main character, we'll go over an example of how dice systems work in Darksome Mirror. As an example of dice mechanics, if I wished to make a skill check, let's say an awareness check in this case, I would roll a number of 10-sided dice equivalent to intellect plus awareness, so in Shinnereth's case, 6 dice. If she has a talent in sight, she can count rolls of 7 or higher as a success. As an example, I've rolled 6d10 and got a result of 1, 2, 5, 7, 9, and 10. By default, rolls of 10 count as 2 successes, and rolls of 1 cancel out successes. Because Shinnereth has a talent in sight, the 7 counts as a success, as would the 9. The
10 counts as 2 successes, so 4 successes minus 1 for the roll of 1, meaning this roll has 3 successes total. This represents a pretty good roll where all the obvious details, such as enemy patrols or fortifications, would be visible. Shinrath may be able to pick out some less obvious things, like one guard being asleep on the job by the gate. If Shinrath was making a perception check against a person who is hiding, this roll would be compared to their stealth roll in a contest. If the enemy achieved 2 successes or less, they would be visible. If they tied or exceeded Shinrath's awareness, they would remain hidden to her. Combat rolls are different because there are more options involved for the parties. If both parties are aware, the attacker makes a roll opposed by an enemy parry or dodge roll. If the attack roll exceeds the parry or dodge roll, the damage plus the success differential, or numeric difference between the contested parties, is subtracted from armor and then inflicted as damage. In the case of spells, unless the spells use a physical projectile that exists on the temporal plane, it must be dodged and cannot be parried. If they have a projectile, such as a firebolt, for example. Some spells, such as those affecting the mind, may instead roll against willpower. Hopefully this makes some amount of sense. At some point in the future, I hope to release the rule set of Darksome Mirror in book form. I should at least be able to put out an example character sheet, if not more, on the Blogspot page for this podcast. There are a few other dice rolls that I'll use. There are a number of custom D100 tables in the rules for certain random outcomes. However, I also wish to use an oracle, which many solo RPGs do. This oracle will be a 2d10 roll. The first dice will be the yes or no dice, where, for example, a 10 is yes and a 5 is no but. The second dice is what I would call the chaos versus normality dice, and represents if something unusual has influenced the narrative. So a 1 on the chaos normality dice means that the yes-no has occurred or been caused by something rather routine or normal in the universe, and a 10 means that it was instead influenced by something highly chaotic or unusual. Subtracting or adding a modifier to either of these dice can also occur. If an unusual thing is unlikely, the chaos normality dice may have a negative modifier, for example. I believe that covers our background introduction. I may go over a few of these points briefly in the first episode, but not in this much depth. This has been an episode of Reflections in the Darksome Mirror. The music heard in this podcast is used by permission from the artist Dahlia's Tear, their record label Cryo Chamber, and the separate artists Dream State Logic and Erong. For more information on these artists, please see the podcast's description. Thank you again for listening. Farewell, and until we meet again, may the stars guide you.